Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. There's a new debate emerging over the proposed memorial to slavery at Faneuil Hall. The idea for the memorial emerged as many activists called for a Faneuil Hall to be renamed because of Peter Faneuil's history as a slave trader. Last week, the artist who was proposing a slavery memorial withdrew from the project. Here to bring us up to date on this story is WBUR reporter Jerome Campbell. Jerome, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Glad to have you. So, Jerome, first, can you tell us about the design as it was proposed for this memorial?
So the memorial was supposed to be a sort of 10 by 16 square in the ground outside of Faneuil Hall. It was going to be in line with the ground and feature a map of trade routes used by the family of Peter Faneuil to bring enslaved people to Boston.
We're going to hear from artist Steve Locke in a few minutes a little bit more about it. But can you tell us about his role with the project, Jerome?
Yeah, so Steve Locke, his relationship with the city began with an artist in residence program. And during that process, he developed this idea of the memorial for Faneuil Hall. He had a conversation with the mayor's office. They liked the idea. He raised about $45,000 in a Kickstarter program and then received $150,000 through funds through the city to move forward with it. So then that brings us up to last week when he receives an email from the president of the NAACP who expresses to him opposition to his project. And sort of fearing sort of what that means going forward, he had a public hearing that was scheduled for that would have been this week. And just being mindful of all the factors at play, he worried that Mayor Walsh might not be able to sort of move forward with one of Boston's sort of preeminent black organizations opposing him, and sort of not wanting to sort of get tied up in whatever that may be, he pulled his project.
Okay, so what does the NAACP say about why they opposed it?
So they, in the statement that I received from them, they did talk about how there's not sort of this whole process was not a sort of inclusive conversation. And what that means is when we look at sort of another public art project that was being moved forward in Boston, the Embrace that's going to be in Boston Commons, there was a conversation that was held with sort of community stakeholders about what it would look like, where it would be, who would be included in it. And that didn't happen with this particular project. And they're saying that if you're going to have a piece, a black public art piece, there's not many here in Boston, it should be an inclusive conversation.
So, Jerome, any word from the mayor's office since this all happened in the last week?
The mayor hasn't said too much about it. The main thing is that he says that it's unfortunate that the NAACP and Steve Locke weren't able to sort of sit down and find a way to make this work going forward.
And out there, we want to hear from you about this. Have you been following the controversy? How do you think the history of slavery in Boston should be memorialized? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. We'll turn to calls in a few minutes. But first, as I said, we spoke with artist Steve Locke earlier today about his decision to withdraw. He told us what he hoped to do with his memorial. Let's listen.
I wanted to make a physical intervention in space that acknowledged the known history that Africans and African Americans were traded in Boston, that their history goes back to the colonial period, and that Peter Faneuil and his family were part of that economic system, and that economic system is the reason why we have Faneuil Hall. And the work was intended to anchor Faneuil Hall in the narrative of black and brown history, and also trouble the space of Faneuil Hall and Quincy Market, so people would know that where they were shopping or having a good time was also the site of where people were transformed from subjects into objects.
And briefly, why did you decide you needed to withdraw your memorial design?
There are a lot of conversations happening in the city right now, and some of them are about changing the name of Faneuil Hall, and some of them are about the need for an expanded race dialogue, and some of them are about the mayor and his relationship to the black community. My work has nothing to do with any of that, but it has been presented that I'm the white mayor's black pawn who has, and the mayor has commissioned me to make this piece. in order to prevent people from having a larger conversation. And I realized that as an artist, the only thing I have control over is my work. So if people want to have those different conversations and my work is getting in the way of those conversations, or if people are claiming that my work was presented as a way to derail those conversations, or if people feel like I am not a member of the Black community, or if people feel like I have not done enough for the Black community and I shouldn't be presenting work on their behalf, then I'm happy to withdraw it. The conversation has gotten really away from honoring those people who were brought here and worked to death to create the wealth of white America. And until the conversation gets back to that, I don't think it would be helpful for me to have my work in the conversation.
Steve, more broadly, what role does public art play in addressing troubled history, collective history, shared history? What role specifically or uniquely can public art play?
People think that public art is there for public entertainment, and it's not, especially a public memorial. A memorial is not a celebration. A memorial is an indictment. And it was my goal to indict the city and the country with a 10 by 16 piece of bronze that acknowledged the presence of enslaved Africans and African Americans in Boston and in America during the colonial period. So I couldn't make people have a conversation about this unless I marshaled all of my efforts to get the city to acknowledge that this thing needed to be built. I and six other artists had the tremendous opportunity to engage the city as artists, and I'm forever grateful for that.
Steve, should public art engage or frame or foment public conversation?
I think that that's the nature of all art, Tiziana. It's not whether it's public or private. The difference is, do people want art in public spaces that is entertainment? Do people want art in public spaces that is supposed to distract them from the world? Or do people want art in public spaces that talks about our shared history, the good and the bad? And that's the question.
What do you hope to see happen at or with Faneuil Hall now?
I don't have a dog in that fight. I really don't. I think people need to have this conversation. I offered my work, and the conversation will continue, and my work will continue, and people will decide what should happen with Faneuil Hall. I do think that there's this equation of Peter Faneuil and Faneuil Hall with post-Civil War monuments to white supremacy. I think there's a sort of faulty equation there. Faneuil Hall is named after Peter Faneuil's family because they built it. So this notion that Faneuil Hall is an honorific in any way is what's problematic. If we change the name of it, or if we take the name off of it, who's going to know that that family and its wealth created the marketplace where it sits? And maybe another artist will be able to come along and tell that story.
So, Steve, what's next for you?
I am working. I got a wonderful job at Pratt Institute in New York City, so I'm going to be moving there as soon as I possibly can. I'm still working on artworks that deal with historic violence against Africans and African Americans, so I'm still working on that. And I'm going to get a dog. I'm really excited about that development more than anything.
That was artist Steve Lack talking about his proposed slavery memorial at Faneuil Hall. Still with us here in the studio is WBUR reporter Jerome Campbell. Jerome, just very briefly, what was your initial reaction in listening to Steve?
Well, in listening to Steve, there's a lot of factors that are going on at play, but I do sort of want to start off with, at first, he mentioned people referring to him as sort of the pawn of the mayor. No, in the conversations I had sort of reporting this out last week, no one explicitly or referred to him as the pawn of the mayor, but I can sort of see where that comes from, and I think it's sort of important to break that down. Sort of what Locke said, there's been sort of two things going on around Faneuil Hall: Steve's work, and then sort of this effort to rename Faneuil Hall. It started some time ago with a push by the New Democracy Coalition, and then sort of on the opposite of that conversation is sort of what the mayor was going to do about that. And so when we look at sort of the I guess all the conversations around Faneuil Hall, it just seems almost a little inevitable that at some point those two would come to an intersection. And we're seeing a lot of we're seeing how all these factors are sort of coming together around this particular issue, and seeing how is revealing sort of a lot of deeper things.
Okay, so we want to expand this conversation further. With us in studio is Marty Blatt. He's a history professor and the director of the Public History Program at Northeastern. Marty, welcome to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by David Harris. He's the managing director of the Charles Hamilton Houston Institute for Race and Justice at Harvard Law School. David, thanks for being with us on Radio Boston.
Good afternoon. It's great to be here.
Remember, we want to hear from you. Have you been following this story? How do you think of the history of slavery in Boston should be memorialized? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, and you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. So let me ask Marty and David, are we in Boston now having a conversation about Black history and the Black experience in this city? David.
So, are we? I would say no.
Okay. So that's a short answer, and I would invite you to expand on it.
It's difficult to say. I mean, I don't necessarily want to be reacting to Mr. Locke, but... But I do think that one of the critical questions we have to ask ourselves is whether we've done the work we need to do before we set about memorializing something. Right? So do we have an understanding, and have we had a reckoning with our history in such a way that that we could, in fact, have a memorial? I think we'll probably get into this, but I think that it's not going to be possible for us to think that we've done that until or unless we have some kind of public conversation, which, to my mind, we haven't had.
So it's a two-stage process, with conversation first in your mind?
I think so. I think any kind of I think, and that's partly the problem we've had in other parts of the country where memorials have actually been taken down and led to a great deal of controversy. There isn't necessarily a conversation about it. There are people who make certain kinds of decisions on behalf of all of the rest of us, and then we're supposed to accept those and move on. I think we have an opportunity to do things a little bit differently here. I want to hear from Marty. My comments and my thinking on this don't really have to do with Mr. Locke or his proposal. I think the need for this conversation is deeper and greater and precedes that memorial.
So, Marty, let me just let you react to that.
Well, I mean, I think that what's going on at Faneuil Hall now, there's been some improvements, okay? I worked for the National Park Service for several years in Boston, and we developed a visitor center contact station. In that text, in that little exhibit, there's half a sentence dealing with Peter Faneuil. That was a mistake. But the Park Service has, and the reason for it being half a sentence, folks said, well, this is a contact station. We just want to get people in, orient them to the city, and get them out. But that was a mistake. And now the Park Service is doing more. In the Great Hall, for example, there are panels that deal with Faneuil and slavery. In the lower level, there's a documentary on the Black abolitionist, Lewis Hayden, that's available. In the fall, there's going to be some wall text dealing with Faneuil and slavery. And the Park Service is involved with the Museum of African American History, installing a marker to mark the history of the Middle Passage at the end of Long Wharf. That's coming up. So there are some positive developments around this critical history going on in the city.
You can join this conversation. What role does public art play in your life, and how does it challenge you and invite you to engage in conversations? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jerome, you've been covering this story. Who and what have you heard are being left out of any conversations that are happening about our history here, about the complexity of the slave trade and the naming of Faneuil Hall, et cetera?
I think when it comes to sort of with this particular issue, the hardest thing is sort of beginning with the idea that conversations around Black history, and particularly around history of Black enslaved people, carries a different weight than compared to a lot of other parts of Black history. And I think because of that, a lot of the conversations that I'm hearing, particularly when I have conversation with people in the Black community, is I think a lot of people have a lot of baggage about what that means to have that conversation publicly. What does that mean to, you know, both sort that out for yourself on a personal level, and then what does that mean to have to deal with that in a space where other people who may not look like you are also having that conversation, and then you're expected to engage with each other?
So David Harris, you nodded when you heard that. Tell us what you're thinking.
Well, so, you know, it's interesting because I think, you know, one of the things that Mr. Locke said is that he was making this memorial on behalf of the Black community. And I think that that's a difficult statement to make.
Why?
Well, because I'm not sure that the Black community participated in determining that this was the appropriate thing, and that, let alone whatever it was, or that it was necessary and needed at this point in time. You know, I think, you know, as Jerome indicated, you know, these to have these kinds of conversations is very difficult. It's very loaded stuff. You know, I think for us to do it, we also need, and I'll say, I think we need a slightly different kind of leadership in the city. I think we need some leadership that's willing to engage in these difficult conversations. And I'm not sure that we've seen that. You know, and I think in terms of trust and having people be willing to have these conversations, there needs to be some indication that it's safe and that it's welcome and that it's being encouraged.
Jerome, go ahead.
I just want to sort of explain just to explain for this particular issue. It's like Steve Locke was not asked to have this conversation. He was not asked to sort of open up or have this. When for this particular project, he had an idea and he presented it to the city, and the city said yes for this. So I just want to make sure that it's clear that Steve didn't really have any burden to sort of open up the conversation initially.
So Marty, you're the director of a public history program. What does leadership look like in a city when they're deeply engaged in painful conversation? What does the invitation look like? How does that work?
Well, I think one very practical development that could happen in this city is right now, if you go into Faneuil Hall, where hundreds of thousands of people are streaming every day over the busy summer tourist season, you have a number of commercial shops. Okay, those are leases put out by the city. The mayor could decide when those leases are up, end them, not renew one or two of them. That frees up some significant space that he could then partner with the National Park Service and others in the city and really get into not just the history of Peter Faneuil. I mean, Faneuil was one white merchant who had the money, the dirty money, to gift the hall to the town. Okay. But slavery was central to colonial Boston. And I am sure that most visitors to Boston and most people in Boston do not know how important slavery is in the history of this city.
So we have a caller. Let's take this call from Joanne in Dorchester. Joanne, what's on your mind?
Hi, I'm so glad you're covering this issue. I just wanted to say I'm a white person, and I grew up in a progressive family. My mother was involved in the civil rights movement. But even so, I didn't know, you know, we didn't hear about Boston, New York, you know, the North being involved. It was really kind of all the Civil War and slavery and all that sort of stuff. And I think because of that, it's so, so important, just as your visitor just said, or your guest just said, that this be, however it happens, that this be really made central to what we see in our public spaces.
Thanks for that, Joanne. And David, I'll turn to you. There's a component of education that Joanne mm-hmm. is talking about. Where does that fit into this larger landscape? We're even getting people up to speed about the truth of our history.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, that's great. That's critical. I mean, I think the things that Marty said make a lot of sense, you know, and I'm reminded of WBUR itself and creating city space. I mean, it's an interesting question as to whether or not you know, we could create some space at Faneuil Hall and elsewhere, I think, to have some conversations. I mean, the other thing I think that's really important is I think if we're going to have these conversations, they don't necessarily need to be at Faneuil Hall, right? I mean, they could be elsewhere.
Where else would be a good place?
Well, somewhere in the Black community, I think. There are lots of places and opportunities for us to do this. And I think that people should have a say in where those conversations take place. I think we saw an example of part of the problem in some of the reporting that reported that this memorial was going to go where a slave auctions used to be held in Boston. Well, it's not really true. It's not really true. That's not really accurate.
What's inaccurate
that,
about
that
it?
there were slave auctions at Faneuil Hall, right? I mean, you know, so I think.
I just want to be really clear for our listeners. Is it inaccurate about the location, or is it accurate that there was slave trading going on?
So I think it's inaccurate about the location. I think that it's inaccurate about the location is for sure. Marty knows better about the actual slave trading.
There were no slave auction blocks inside Faneuil Hall or immediately adjacent. Locke, to be fair to him, did not intend this to be literal. He intended it to be a metaphor.
I see.
Okay.
Yeah.
But were there enslaved Africans? Was there the sale and purchase of enslaved Africans all over the town of Boston, on the wharves, off ships, in taverns, in warehouses, all over the place? And you can look at the press of the 18th century, advertisements all over the sale of human beings.
Let's take one more call. Marlene from Alston's on the line. Marlene, what's on your mind?
What's on my mind is I'm a frequent flyer to Faneuil Hall. And of all the people in Massachusetts, I can't believe that there is not one African-American business in Faneuil Hall. How about if some space get opened up for that possibility?
Thanks for that, Marlene. And actually, I'll take reactions from any three of our panelists. Jerome, have you heard anything about that in your reporting?
No, I didn't. I didn't look into sort of the businesses of Faneuil Hall. I will say that one of the things that did come up, and maybe this is sort of tangentially related, is that for a space that is really wrestling with Black history at that particular location, there doesn't really seem to be any sort of identifier of Black history in that particular area. But that's also sort of true for a lot of spaces of Boston. I know, sort of circling back to the memorial that's coming up, the Martin Luther King memorial, the Embrace. I mean, to memory, I think that's one of maybe a handful that I can think of recently. I know that in the State House, I think they recently had a bust of Frederick Douglass, but that was maybe within the last couple of years or
so. Fairly
years or
recent.
So. Yeah.
All right. So very quickly, because we're very short on time, David and Marty, do you see any other places that have meaningfully engaged with their own violent histories? Just quickly, do either of you have an example?
In the United States,
yeah.
You mean?
Yeah.
So I don't think there are. I mean, I prepared for this. I did a little digging today. I mean, I think there was an instance in Greensboro, North Carolina, where there were some events that took place with some Klan members and some Nazis who committed some murders, you know, killed five people. And the town of Greensboro did, in fact, do a little truth and reconciliation process there. And, in fact, you know, I think they succeeded. You know, I just like to speak. Could I speak to Jerome's point? Very quickly. I mean, it's not only Faneuil Hall. It's also the seaport. So the problem is that history repeats itself. There also are not a lot of businesses run by people of color in the seaport. And so the fact of the matter is that history is prelude to the present. Right. And so I think that those are that much larger conversation about the structure of power and relationships in this country. I mean, in the city, continue to reflect that history. And until we deal with that, you know, and I think there's a difference between art and memorial. So Steve Locke proposed a piece of art.
Not
no question.
A memorial. Yeah. And Jerome, you wanted to do a quick clarification there.
Yeah. And I think just sort of to really just echo what David said, that Steve's piece was a piece of art. It was not meant to be taken literally. It was supposed to be a metaphorical take. I think even one of the things that he wrote that on the Kickstarter was saying that the fact that it was inlaid in the ground was supposed to be intentionally sort of looked over and stepped on and have all sorts of situations happen to on accident. And that was a metaphor just for the way in which the slave history is thought about and talked about here.
Thank you for that. We actually have to wrap up. So that was Jerome Campbell, WBUR reporter. Jerome, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Marty Blatt, a history professor and the director of the Public History Program at Northeastern, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And David Harris, managing director of the Charles Hamilton Houston Institute for Race and Justice at Harvard Law School. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Hey, stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.